The laws of Yerusha are very straightforward in the Chumash and in the Gemara. It's irrelevant whether the surviving relatives were close to the Nifter or not close to the Nifter, whether they were friendly with him, whether they got along or not. It all depends on the kurva. I remember once a couple was telling me a long, complicated shaila in Hilchos Yerusha, and they were giving all the information that was irrelevant about who was Mishamish the Nifter and whom he liked and who didn't like it. It was all irrelevant. It's very clear cut who gets the Yerusha. let's say it happened that an uncle of mine died a few years ago, and he never married. So he had no descendants, and he had, and his parents were not allowed. The din is that if there are no descendants, then the father gets the Yerusha. The father wasn't alive either, so the brothers get the Yerusha. There were no brothers, so the sisters get the Yerusha. So there were four sisters. Two of them had already passed away, and two were still alive at the time. So the two who passed away, one of them had two children, and the other one had three children. So the din is that the four sisters should divide the Yerusha equally. Each one gets 25%. Each one gets a quarter. And the one, my mother was one sister, so I have a sister. So the din is that the bein is kodem labat. So I should have gotten 25% of the Yerusha. So the one who was the executor of the will didn't know the dinim. They thought that the bein is kodem labat is only by children. They didn't realize that it applies even to great nephews. So they decided, okay, that I'm going to get equal with my sister. Fine, okay. But then they made another mistake. The other sister who had passed away already had three children. She had two sons and a daughter. So they decided that all the nephews and the nieces get equally. So I got equal to my sister, who got an equal share to the other three cousins, which was not correct. We should have gotten 25%. We should have not divided. I should have gotten all Yerusha. I want to divide it with my sister, okay, so she'll get 12 and a half and I'll get 12 and a half. And the other sister who had already predeceased this uncle who died, so her three children should have divided in three shares. She really only had two sons and one daughter, so she should have divided in two again. So it's very simple. The laws of Yerusha are very simple. There is a din that's not that well known. The din of Pishnaim of the Pchor is well known. But the Mishnah says that the Pchor is only Notel Pishnai B'muchzok and not B'ro'ui. What does that mean? B'muchzok and not B'ro'ui. So there are two examples. So one example of Ro'ui is, the Gemara says, Nichsei Da'hu Da'abo. If, let's say, you have Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. Let's say, for argument's sake, Yitzchok dies first. It wasn't the case. Let's say, for argument's sake, Yitzchok dies before Avraham Avinu. And Yitzchok leaves two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Let's say, for argument's sake, Yaakov is the Chor. So the Chor gets Pishnaim. So he gets two-thirds, and Esav gets one-third. Pishnaim does mean that you always get two-thirds. If there are 10 sons, so the Chor is considered as if he were two sons, so he gets 2/11. Instead of dividing the Yerusha into 10 shares, he divides into 11, he gets 2/11. If there are three sons, and one of them is a Chor, so you consider her the firstborn. Sometimes, let's say in my family, I have six daughters and three sons. So I have no pchor, because my oldest child is a daughter. And the daughter isn't entitled to Pishnaim, and she doesn't get any Yerusha at all. The sons get Yerusha. And the oldest son is not the pchor, so there's no deal of a pchor. And the Mishnah says in the end of Pchoris, there's a Mishnah that tells you all the dinim of Pidyon Abed, Perek Yesh Pchor. So it explains that the definition of Chor for the purposes of Pishnaim is not the same as the definition of Chor for the purposes of Pidyon Haben. For the purpose of Pidyon Haben, it depends on Peterechem, as opposed to the din over here of Pishnaim, it depends on Reishis Ono. So let's say I marry a woman who had 10 children from her first marriage, and the first husband died or divorced her, and then I marry her, and then she has a few children by me. So that if the first child that we have together is a boy, even though he's child number 11 and her list of children, so there's no Pidyon Haben because he's not the Peterechem. There were 10 children before him, but he's going to get Pishnaim because that's Reishis Ono. Yehu Reishis Ono. So the Gemara has, let's say in this case, if you have Nichsei Davu Adavo, if you say for argument's sake, Yitzchok dies before Avraham Avinu, and he leaves two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Let's say, for argument's sake, Yaakov is the Bechor and Esav is the Pashut. So you divide, instead of dividing the Yerusha into two parts, he divided it into three parts. Yaakov Avinu is the Bchor, gets 2/3, and Esav gets 1/3. If Avram Avinu is a millionaire and he dies after Yitzchak, so at the time of Yitzchak's death, he didn't yet have his father's assets. So Yaakov is not going to get, when Avram dies later, and Yitzchak Yarshins Bekever, so to speak, the Gemara has such an expression, Yitzchak is Yarish Bekever, L'Hanche L'Banov, so Yaakov is not entitled to 2/3 of Nichsei Davu Adaba, because he simply, Yitzchak didn't have those assets at all at the time that he died. Or let's say the father had bought a sweepstakes ticket, and the drawing of the lottery is after the father's death. And then it turns out that he had the winning ticket, so he hadn't yet won at the time that he died. He hadn't yet won this amount of money. So the Bchor is not going to get Pi Shnayim in that. He only gets B'Muchzok. The Pasuk says, "Sabchor B'Nasnuak Yosis La Pi Shnayim B'Chol Hashe Yimotzei Lo." So the Gemara says, "Hashe Yimotzei Lo only B'Muchzok and not B'Roi, only what the father has at the time of death." Then the Gemara learns that the same din from another Pasuk. It says, "As Sabchor B'Nasnuak Yakir Losis Lo Pi Shnayim." The Gemara says, "Matana Kal Yirachmona." A matana is only if I have it already. If I don't have it, I can't give it to the poor. So Tosis is bothered with Akasha. Why did the Tanoim need two different psukim to teach you the same thing? So the Pashtus is that if you learn the sugi and Yesh Noichlin, the Gemara points out that there's a machlokes Tanoim, Rebbe and Chachamim, regarding this din of Ro'i. What's the definition of Ro'i? So one opinion is that only Nichsi Davua Da'aba is considered Roy, meaning such assets that the father simply didn't possess at the moment of his death. But we don't pass them like that. We pass them that there's another category of Roy, namely, if the father had money, but he had loaned it to someone else, and he didn't collect Ahalva. If the father had lent that money, someone was mazik the father, or the father had the lottery was already, and he already had the winning ticket, and it won already before he died, but he just never collected it. So what do you do if there's a chov that the father just never collected the chayor? So that's a machlekes hatanoim, and we pass on that case is also considered ro'oi and not muchzik, and the mechor doesn't get pishnai. So let's say the pashtus ought to be, if so, let's say the father had money in a savings account. If the father has money in a safe deposit vault, the father leaves all of his money in his mattress. Or he's smarter than that, so instead of leaving the mattress, he puts it in a safe deposit vault. So it's locked up. The cash is there. So this mam shall be cut. So the poor is going to get pishnayim on the money that's in the mattress or in the safe deposit vault. Which tipich is going to put in a safe deposit vault cash? If you can put it in a savings account, you can invest it. So the father puts it, let's say, in a savings account. The money in a savings account, that's not a pikadon. The bank is going to go spend the money. They're going to give you back different money when you come to collect it. So basically, money that you put in a savings account is a halvoah. Well, let's say you have stocks and bonds, government bonds, or you have corporation bonds. So that's a loan. You make a loan to the United States government, or the Israeli government, whichever government happens to be. Or you make a loan to a corporation, and that's a halvoah. So the pashto should be that in halvoah, the pchor is that's the machlokes Rebbe and Chachamim. And we paskin that in halvoah, the pchor is not entitled to pishnai. So the pashto says that's the reason why you needed two psukim. So he says, why do you need two psukim? So perhaps one could answer the second pasuk is needed the way we paskin la'alach, if it didn't, would have been like Rebbe. That the only case that's called ro'u is nichsi davu da'aba, the nechasim, that the father simply didn't yet the assets that he didn't have at the time of his death. So then one pasuk will solve the whole problem. But because we pass like a chachamim, that there's another category of ravui, and we wouldn't have said the sanarom mitzaraslo. So for that, mistami need the additional pasuk. So the Gemara has discussions regarding this din, that a halvoa, if the father had lent the money out and he hadn't yet collected it, if the father collected it before he died, so it's a regular asset. Means the father lent that money, he didn't collect it yet before he died. So the Gemara says, maybe not all halvoyas should be considered ro'ui. Maybe some of them should be considered like muchzik, and some of them should be considered like ro'ui. So the Gemara draws a distinction. Maybe it makes a difference whether he lent the money to a Yisrael, or he lent the money to a Nochri. In which direction does it make a difference? So the Rashbam says, obviously, the Gemara means to say that there's a better chance that you're going to collect it if you lent it to a Yisrael. Lend it to a Nochri, he may never pay you back. You can't trust a Nochri, but lent it to a Yisrael, there's a better chance you're going to get it back. That's how the Rashbam says. He says there are some Rishonim who interpreted the other way, and he says he can't understand that at all. I mean, I lent it to a Nochri, that's called Mukhnuk. Lent it to Yisrael, then it's called Roy. How can that be? So the Yos HaMeach writes, he can understand that. It doesn't mean, the Gemara is not saying a psychological umdene. According to Rashbam, the Gemara is working with psychology. That you stand a better chance of collecting the money that you lent to the Yisrael than collecting the money that you lent to the Yaakov. But according to the other Gemara, it's a halachic consideration, not a psychological consideration. Let's say I lent money to a Jew, and it comes to Zman HaPiron, has no money to pay. So what can I do? So Allah says, nothing. Well, what are you going to do? If he doesn't have any assets, so you go to Bezin, Bezin's going to search. He has no karka, he has no metalklum. So he can't see, what are you going to do? So God, you can't take the underwear off of his back. We write Miksuba, Afila Minglima Dal Kasfei, that the husband is entitling his wife to collect the shirt off of his back. But strictly speaking, the Mora has a discussion about that. Is that really true? The Allah is the machlokes in the Gemara, machlokes Rashi and Rabbin and Tam. What the din is? What the misadrin lebalchoy? When somebody owes money to the gizba shal hegdish, he said erki alai, erko alai. He owes money to the gizba, so the gizba doesn't take the shirt off of his back. He leaves him the bare necessities of life. So the Gemara has a machlokes, and it's machlokes Rashi and Rabbin and Tam had a taskin. Does that din even apply to when a hedyot is coming to collect? Or is that only when Hegdish is decent about it, the Gizba is not going to take the shirt off his back? What about when it's been Adam Lachaveh, Reuben is collecting from Shimon? Do you say also, Misadrin Labalchad, you have to leave him a little bit, don't take Mamish's underwear, let him stand naked in the street? And that's the Shaila how we pass in Lalach. So the so the din, let's say if the fella has no money, he has no money, what are you going to do? If you lend to a Jew, if you lend to a Nochri, he has no money, then we read in the Haftorah the way Isha Achas Min Shei HaNavim Boel El Isha HaNavi, and she comes to complain that her husband was a Yirei Shamayim and he owes a fortune of money and he died V'Hanosha Bola Kachas HaShnei Yalodai, and the Malbid is coming to take my children as Avodin. What kind of a din is that? There is no such halacha. So obviously during the reign of Achab and Izebel, they followed Dinei B'nei Noach. They didn't follow Dinei HaTorah. And in Dini bin Enoch, what's the din? So apparently the din is that if a person owes money, you can sell him as an eved. We have such a din in Halacha, Nimka Bignevosoi, a special din by a ganav. If a ganav stole, so there are rare cases where you have a right to sell, and the ganav doesn't have any money to pay the keren. If he paid the keren and didn't pay the kefel, then yeah, it's not. The din is a Nimka Bignevosoi velobik feli. You can't sell him as an eved because he didn't pay the kefel. But if he didn't pay the keren, so then there's a halacha b'nimka b'gnevosu. So the Gemara, the Mechilta, has a comment on that pasuk, b'nimka b'gnevosu v'lo b'chovo. If a person owes money, so we don't have any debtors' prison, you don't put him in prison if he doesn't pay. He doesn't have a job and he doesn't pay. He doesn't have any money, so go, so he can't collect. But if it's a benoyah who owes the money, so then apparently b'didi b'nenef, there is such a concept that if the fellow owes money, so he's the bezdin, is authorized, the government is authorized to sell him as an eved and to collect the money. And by us, there is no such halacha. Taisa Sing Subis says a machlekes harishayim. What about abal chay b'mezonis ishtoi? The obligation of the husband to buy food and clothing for his wife. So does that only apply if he has assets? Then he's mukhif to go buy food and clothing for his wife. What if he doesn't have any assets? So one opinion, there's a big machlekes in Taisa. So one opinion in Taisa is, no, that's a special takanas chachamim. Is mukhif to go get a job in order to supply the wife with the food and the clothing. The other opinion is no. The obligation of the husband to the wife on the share ksus, the food and the clothing, is the same as any other obligation. If he has money, he has to give it over to the wife. Doesn't have money, doesn't have. Finished. Then Tosha says we shouldn't let anybody know about that opinion. That's a chil Hashem. The goyim will make fun of us. That if the husband doesn't want to, he doesn't have to get a job. And if he has no assets, he's not mechuyif to support his wife. How can it be? Taisus is very upset. That's ridiculous. The goyim are going to laugh as they find the whole discussion in Taisus. So the Yos HaMeach suggests, based on that nevuah, based on that section in Sefer Melachim, to explain this opinion in the Rishonim that if the halva was made to a nochri, that's called muchzak, not because he stands a better chance of collecting the debt than if you would have lent it to a Jew. No, if anything, that would be the reverse, the way the Rashbam says. But rather because al pidin, you stand a better chance of collecting. Because if you lent the money to a nochri, and the nochri doesn't have, the loiva doesn't have any money to pay, so the bezin shel b'nei noach has the right to sell him as an eved, and to take the money to pay up the debt. Mashenik in Yisrael, if Yisrael doesn't have any money, they won't sell him as an eved. They may never collect any money. So the Gemara drew such a distinction. The Gemara had one opinion, that it makes a difference whether you lent the money to a nakam or Yisrael. And the Rashbam learned the reverse. Rashbam says, that opinion was that if you lent the money to a nakum, that's called ro, you may not get it back. If you lent it to Yisrael, that's probably called muchzor. He's probably going to pay back the money. Whatever the havamin of the Gemara was, it was nitzche. So the maskana, we usually assume that it doesn't make a difference what kind of a chov it is. So there's a tshuva in the Nari Behuda where the shoyl, a lot of times the shoyl is a plain, if you look in the Igros Moshe, so a lot of times the shoyl is a big Talmid Chacham, a lot of times the shoyl is a little Talmid Chacham, sometimes a plain balabas, it doesn't know anything. Look in tshuva's Rav Yehuda Vega. The first tshuva in tshuva's Rav Yehuda Vega was to a woman. So very poshut the balapos. She didn't remember. She thought they once forgot Yalav and benching. She thought you don't have to bench over. So he said, you remember wrong. Goodbye. That's the whole shuvah. Then he says, well, maybe a woman forgot. He stands on his head to try to explain. Maybe, yeah. But he says, no. So the different shuvah. So this shuvah, the Nadi Yehuda, is so big Talmid Chacham. The Shoyal and the Nadi Yehuda thought that even though this was nitzche, the difference between lending money to a Jew, lending money to a Nachri, is nitzcha l'maskonis ha-gemara, that means because it's not so easy to collect back the debt, not from Yisrael, not from an Akum. It's rowi, it's not called mukhzak. What if it's a government loan? What if it's a government bond? Or what if the bank is insured, federally insured by the government? So even if the bank doesn't have money, it's a vados, I'm going to collect money, unless the whole government is going to collapse. And we're not talking about the Bolivian government that collapses every 2 years and they don't pay up. Not talking about the Polish government either. They were talking about the Polish government. We're talking about the American government over here. The American government. The government is not holding by collapsing. And even if the bank will collapse, but it's federally insured, so is that considered roi? Maybe that should be considered muchzak. That's mamash abadoi that you're going to collect it. So the shoyl and the tshuva of Yehuda thought that that should be considered muchzak. Now the Yehuda answers, that's ridiculous, halach is halacha. That was the havamin in the Gemara, that you use a little, you mix in psychology, and you try to guess in advance which halvos do you stand a better chance of collecting, which halvos do you stand less of a chance of collecting. Once the Gemara comes from Maskana, it doesn't make a difference whether the halvos is made, whether the loiva is a Jew or a nachri. So even if the loiva is the federal government, the loiva is a bank and it's federally insured, or corporations that are federally insured, all halvos are considered roi. So this is a shaila, whether we should really hold like that Nadi Yehuda. The Aruch HaShulchan is not happy with that Nadi Yehuda. He thinks that we should paskin like the shoyl. That's on the page 3 in the Marma Koymus, in Reish Ayin Ches, the Chosh Mishpat Sifri Gimel, talks about the Shtore Shal HaMelucha. He says that the government bonds, government bonds are considered mukhtar, because you know you're going to collect it. He says that he knows that one of the Gdolim wrote a tshuva. He doesn't want to say it's in the Rabbi Yehuda. He says one of the Gdolim wrote a tshuva that is considered right, but he doesn't think that it's correct.
Who considers
it muksa? Pardon me? The Or HaShulchan considers it muksa. He thinks that the shoyl is correct. People who were close to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein say that he also thought that the halacha should be like the shoyl. And also in the first tshuva here, in pages 1 and 2, Bitzko Honan wrote a response to the rabbi in Frankfurt about this issue. So he also thinks that if it's a federal loan, of course the government is going to pay off. He thinks that that's considered muhsik, that's not considered roi. So this is a shayla alach lamai. So it comes up also in another case. It comes up, there is a din. The same halacha applies. I said, I don't have a bchor because I have 9 children. The first child is a daughter. So nobody has any pish 9. But let's say it comes up, the din is habal yerushes ishta. The husband yarshins the wife. Even though even though the wife, let's say, has children, let's say the wife has children from a previous marriage, and this is a second marriage, and the wife has a lot of assets, so the halacha says that the husband yarshins the wife. If there was nisuin, if there's only erisin, a baal is not yarsh. If there's nisuin, we never have. Where do we have erisin without nisuin? We never have such a thing. So if there's nisuin, then the din is a baal yarsh es ishtay. So the din is that the husband only yarshins the wife. B'muchzak v'lo b'roy. It's a mishnem chayrus. And daf nun aleph. Only b'muchzak and not b'roy. So there's a big machlekes in the Rishonim. Whether the both dinim of roy, we said it's a machlekes, Rabbi and Chachamim, is there one din of roy or two dinim of roy? So there's a big machlekes in Rishonim. We pass and there are two dinim of roy, like the Chachamim, the Rabbi. Not only nichse davu adabu is called roy, even a halva is also called roy. So Tosfos has a long ariches. Tosfos insists that the both dinim of roy apply even to ein abal yerush esishta beroy, only b'muchzak. So let's say the couple is married and the wife dies, and after the wife dies, let's say it doesn't have to be a second marriage, let's say a first marriage, the couple is married, the wife dies, and then the father-in-law dies after the wife. And let's say the father-in-law had no sons, he only has daughters. So the daughters all yarshin equally. There's no din of chora, there's no din of pishnayim by the daughters. So the daughter yarshins bekever. So the halacha says that the husband does not get the yerusha. Let's say there are millions of dollars involved over here. The husband does not get the yerusha, it goes to the children. That's real roy. That's like nichsi davu adaba. The wife simply didn't have the assets. She didn't possess those assets at the time that she died. But the shaila is, what if the wife had money in the bank account? Or what if the wife had outstanding chayvus that other people... She had lent her money to other people, and she didn't collect it before she died. So Tosfos' opinion is, that's how we pass on the Shulchan Aruch, like the Tosfos, that's Rov Rishonim hold like that, that the both dinim of roy apply. Not only if the father-in-law dies after the wife, that's literally nichsed avodah, but that's the real roy l'chaladeh, but even the halvor roy, also the baal doesn't get. And the Rimigash disagrees. The Rimigash is of the opinion, and the Magen Mishnah thinks that the Rambam agrees with the Rimigash. They're of the opinion that only the first din of roy applies over here, and the other din of roy does not apply. The Bishmul writes in Ebenezer, where they have this simon of habal yerush ishtay, and he only gets b'muchzak, not b'roy. So the Bishmul says that even if the husband is muchzok on the money, let's say the people who owed the money to the wife came, and they paid up the money to the husband after the wife died already, and the din was that they were supposed to pay up the money to the to the children from the first marriage or whatever, to her children, not to her husband. The baal doesn't get the yerush. So the Beis Shmuel has a shaila, but what if the husband happens to be muchzok on it? We have a klal in Choshen Mishpat that if someone is muchzak on the moment, he can say kimli kedas hayochid. I hold la locha like the shita of the Rimagash. So the Beis Shmuel says we have a klal in Choshen Mishpat in the Hilchos kimli that you can't say kimli like a shita yechidor. You'll always find some odd shita printed somewhere in some sefer or another, even if it happens to be the Rimagash, who disagrees with everybody else. So if you have a shita yechidor that's totally ignored, you can't say kimli. And then he adds on, and even though the Magen Mishnah thinks that the Rambam agrees with the Rimagash, the Rambam and the Rimagash make two Rishonim, but that's not such a Shita Yechidah. So the Beis Shmuel says no. The Rambam is so kofuf to the Rimagash. I think he writes in one place that he met the Rimagash. His father learned by the Rimagash, and he writes Sichlo Mavis b'chol haTalmud. He was a genius. Sichlo Mavis b'chol haTalmud, absolute genius. So the Rambam is usually so kofuf, every so often the Rambam will disagree with the Rimagash, but whenever the Rambam agrees, he was so kofuf to the Rimagash in Psak Halacha, it doesn't count as an independent opinion. It counts as if it's only one shita, just a shita's Rimagash, and a shita yichidor, you can't say kimli. That's the Psak of the Beis Shmuel, that we pass in all the way like shita Sateisvis, that the both dinim of the both types of ra'ui apply to the din of Eina Bal Yerush Esishta Beroi Ki Bamuchzak. Not only if the father-in-law dies after the wife, that's the real roy, Nichsi Davu Adabo, even if the wife had made a halvor, that's also called roy. So this happens a lot of times. the wife dies and she has money in a savings account. Or the wife had money in bonds, government bonds, or bonds of a corporation, which is a loan. but it's insured by the government. So insured by the government. So this is a big machlokes. Millions of dollars can be involved. Over here, Shaila, who gets the erushin? I remember years ago, the first time I visited Eretz Yisrael, there was such a din Torah going on in the Bezin of Tel Aviv. One of the very prominent, it was at that time, one of the very prominent Rabbanim had lost his wife, and his Zivik Sheni, his second wife, was a wealthy woman, and then she died again before the husband. And she had many children from the first husband, she didn't have any children from the second husband. And she had a fortune of money. She used to live in America, and she was in real estate. She had what they considered a lot of money. I don't think it was millions, it was thousands, a large sum of money. So the husband wanted to get the Yerusha. And her children from the first marriage said no, that everything is roy, it's not mukhsik. So stak adik shaylan halacha, who's right in such a case? Is it the father's responsibility to make a will? See, what happens a lot of times is if the father isn't going to, if the father makes a secular will, if there's a lot of money involved, so then the children who are not interested in following that secular will, they say, we want to go to a din Torah. And they know the din Torah is not going to pass according to the secular will. If the father makes a tzavo according to halacha, so then, but he didn't make it according to the secular law, so then the children will say, the most frum chassidish children, if you have a large sum of money, so they'll say, we want to go to secular court, we don't want to follow. So you have to, if you have a lot of money involved, if you know that your children are tzaddikim, then Rabbi Kivega says, the children are mechuyim mitam kibarach, to honor whatever the father said. So the father can say, without any kinyonim or anything, no secular will, no halachic will, father says, I want the daughters to get an equal share with the sons, period. So whatever the father says goes, a din of kibarav. I, Rabbi Kivega, says a din of kibarav is only mishalav alo mishal bein. A din of kibarav only requires, let's say my father's interested in visiting Eretz Yisrael. So he says to me, he wants me to arrange for his trip. So I said, fine, daddy, give me a credit card and I'll be happy to take care of it. So he says, no, kibarav, you use your credit card. So the Gemara says, if the father has money, my father has money. So the din is, if the father has money, so kibarav is mishalav, alo mishal bein, that's not part of kibarav. I should spend money for my father. Now mechuyev kibarav means, I'll make the phone call, I'll drive you to the airport, I'll carry your suitcase, I'll take care of everything, but it's on your credit card. I'll arrange for the hotel room, everything, on your credit card, not on my credit card. So the Kivega asked against himself, in the first chale, the Shalosh Shuvos of the Kivega, what do you mean? Whatever the father says goes means didn't keep it up. But once the father dies, so the money goes to the sons. So the sons are not mechuyev to spend their money in order to make kibarav, to give the money to the sisters. The father's dictating to the sons what they should do with their money. Once he dies, it's their money, it's not his money. So Rabbi Kivega says, come on, what are you talking? That's mishalav. That money used to belong to the father. He's giving an instruction what they should do with his money after he died. He's not telling the children, spend money from your pocket. He's telling him, the money that used to be in my pocket that's going to go now to your pocket, give it, share it equally with the sisters. So Rabbi Kivega is talking in an ideal world, maybe he lived in Germany, maybe with Yekis they were. So whatever the father says, keep it up. So they're going to listen to the father. But in real life, a lot of times it's not the case. If you only have a secular will, the wise guy children will say, we're going to go to a din Torah. If you only have a halachic will, which is not recognized by the secular government, they're going to say, we're going to go to the secular court. So what you have to do is make sure that your will is correct, both according to secular law and according to the halacha. So here, in the first page, in this Shalosh HaTshuvos, this is Shalosh HaTshuvos Matei Levi. He was the Rav of Frankfurt, and he has this tshuva by Rabbi Kivega, the letter to Rabbi Kivega, that Rabbi Kohanim sent to him. So they were discussing, is it the father's obligation to speak to it that the Bechor gets the Pishnaim? Is that the way you read the Pasuk? It sounds like that's what it says in the Pasuk. It's the father's obligation to see to it that the Bechor gets Pishnaim. So if you know he's talking about such a case, he knows that the children are not so religious. And if he's just going to say, don't forget, on his deathbed, he's going to say, don't forget that the person titled Pishnayim, he knows that they're going to go to secular court, and the secular court doesn't honor the din of Pishnayim. Secular court will divide all the assets equally among all the children. So that's the shaila that they're discussing, is that the father's responsibility. So l'chori, that's the pshat in the pas. As apkor ben asu ayakel l'aslo Pishnayim. The Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvahs counts that as one of the mitzvahs I say. The Rambam wrote a whole Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Taryag Mitzvahs, 248 mitzvahs, 365 mitzvahs, l'esay. So the Rambam gives you what he considers his listing of the 248 mitzvahs, etc. And then the Ramban deletes about 16, 18 or so mitzvahs, not sure. He deletes a whole bunch of mitzvahs, and then he replaces them with other mitzvahs, in order that should add up to the Ramach mitzvahs, etc. And the Shasta mitzvahs, l'esay. So one of the mitzvahs that the Ramban added on to the Minyan HaMitzvahs HaSeh is this, Kes Abcha Ben Asnoa Yakir, the father's responsibility to see to it while he's alive that the Bchor gets the Pishnayim. So the Mele in this case that the Matei Levi was discussing with the Rebbe Yitzchok Hanan, the father has reason to think that the sons are not going to honor the Din HaTorah, they're going to go to secular court in order not to have to give the Pishnayim. So it's the responsibility of the father that he has to put that into the will, that the Bchor should get the Pishnayim into the secular will, to force the children to honor it. So according to the Ramban, it sounds like that is exactly what the mitzvah requires of us. Yitzchok Hanan, however, points out that it's against the Gemara. He quotes the Ktzayt HaChashin, says it's against the Gemara. The Gemara asks, in Bava Basra, in Perek Yesh Nechon, Yakir Lomali, why do I need that pasuk? So the Gemara understood that Yakir is not that the father is obligated to see exactly this China. The father is not obligated to see to it that the Bchor gets Pishnayim. Yakir means that the father is believed to determine who is the oldest child. If the father is dying at the age of 120, and all the children are between the ages of 80 and 70 and 90, I don't know, or 100, 70 and 100, so you can't tell who's oldest. If the father dies at the age of 50, you can tell who's the oldest. If the father's dying at the age of 95, how do you know who's older than who? So the Gemara understands that Yakir just means the father has the manas to determine who is the oldest of the children. Then the Gemara asks the Kasha, why do I need a pasuk that the father has special namanas and there is akasa? Gemara says, it's pashut. If the father wants his biyado, he can give over all the pishnayim now. He can give them atana. So we have a klal, even though you normally need two kasher eidim when it comes to a case of dini mamanas. But in the case when it's biyadi, I have full control over the situation and I can see to it that the money will go to the one whom I say is entitled to the money. So then even if I'm an eid echad and I'm an eid pasul, I still have no money. So the Gemara asks, the father, it's biyado. It's biyado of the father to give over the nechasim nabim atonah. So the Gemara works on that kasha. Why do you need the pasul? The Gemara goes, it must be an adavish lo baliyoyimam. The father's belief to say who is the bchor, even with respect to the nechasim that he's going to get later. The nechasim is going to get after he dies, so the bchor doesn't get pishnayim on that. That's roi, it's not mukhtar. The Gemara says, no. And the nechasim is going to get after today. He's saying today that this is the bchor, so the money, father's not holding by dying yet. He's not on his deathbed. He has another couple of years to go. So if the father will earn more money, so he's not neman on that. But if you hold like Rav Meir, that a dovish l'bali yoylam, you can make a kinyan, so it's still beyond on that. So the Gemara gives a teretz on that kasha also. So Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan quotes that the ktsoif and Choshe Mishpat raises the question, what is the Gemara's question? Yakir Lomali. The Gemara should have said, why does it mean Yakir? It's the father's responsibility to see to it that the Bchor should get the Pishnayim. Who says that Yakir is just making a statement of Nemanis? Yakir is a din, it's the father's responsibility. That's what it sounds like from the Ramban. So that's what the Ktsoi says, that's what Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan says. The Pashtus in the Gemara is against the Ramban. It would appear that it's not the father's obligation. Not the father's obligation to see to it that the bchor. If the children cheat him, so the other children are gone of it. But it's not the father's obligation to see to it that he gets the pishnayim. The pasuk Yakir just tells us that the father has no manas. Yitzchok Hanan thinks, though, that in this case the father is obligated to write it into the secular will for a different reason. It's not his obligation to see to it that the bchor gets pishnayim. But if I see somebody, let's say I see a little kid damaging a car. I see a little Puerto Rican kid breaking into a car. So if I can scream, what are you doing? Get away! But if I can protect the other person's property, so Abadi, you have a din. Lasamen adam riyachol. The Rambam quotes from the Torah Kohen. Lasamen adam riyachol goes, don't let someone lose his life. And domim tarte mashmin, don't let someone lose his property. If you see that someone's damaging someone else's property. Or let's say someone is in the middle of a robbery. So I can call the police and get them to catch the ganav in the middle. So I have an obligation to call the police. So that's going to cost me a fortune of money to call the police. But if it's easy to call the police, so that's what Rabbi Yitzchak Hanna says. The father knows his children, and he knows that they're not religious, and they're not going to honor the din in the Chumash that the Bechor is entitled to the Tishnayim. So if the father will make a secular will, which will include the din of Tishnayim, so there won't be what to discuss, so the children will not be able to steal from the Bechor. So if the father can, that's like calling the police to prevent someone from perpetrating a crime, to prevent someone from gambling from somebody else. So if the father can easily prevent the geneva from happening, this is an act of geneva. A lot of people make a mistake. They think once the person dies, his assets are hefker, and then we're all zechem and a hefker. That's not true. If you have a gershem meis ve'in lo yorshim, the assets are hefker. But if it's a person, in lecha olam yisol she'in lo yorshim, if it's a Jewish person, even if it's a 25th cousin who's going to get the yusha, it's not hefker. People take liberties. Sometimes an almana dies and she has no children, so whoever was closest to her just pockets all the money that she has around the house, and they try to take as much. They think everything is hefker. They're outright geneva. Even if the yorish is going to be a 50th cousin, the money belongs to the yorish right away. So that's what Rabbi Yitzchak Hanna thinks. He says we don't really accept that Ramban, that yakir doesn't mean that it's the father's obligation to see that the bechor should get the pishnayim. But in this case, where he knows that the other children are not religious, they're not going to honor the din of pishnayim. It's the father's obligation, lafrushe meisura, in order to prevent the others from doing a geneva, from gambling their money from the bechor, so he should put it into the secular will. So then the shayla is, he should put into the secular will. What should he put in? What about the government bonds? And what about the corporation bond? Is the bechor entitled to pishnayim? So that's the whole machlekes. So that's you got to take a stand on that. How are you going to pass the halach?
Is it pashut that there's Samar al dam riyacha before the actual ma'isa gazema begins? He's reading the will for health.
But he knows his children that they're not going to listen. If I know that a geneva is going to occur and I can prevent it easily, so I should certainly try to do something to prevent it. It's not such a big tircha. So you should make a secular will to include it. Some of the biggest court cases are with the most religious people fighting about dinim. The Beferish, the man, Chassidus Sherev, he left the Tzavor. So what is it? No. Whichever court they stand to win in, either secular court or Jewish court, whichever court they win, that's the court they're going to go to. A lot of money involved. So everybody is out for the money. Is there a din of a Tzavor? Can you divert the laws of Yerusha? Can you change the laws of Yerusha? So the Mishnah in Bava Batra, Kuf Lamed, Amar Aleph says yes. Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika as saying, based on the pasuk in Chumash, "Voy b'yom hanchilo esbonav eis hashiyalo." What do you mean, "b'yom hanchilo esbonav eis hashiyalo"? When he's about to give over the Yerusha, he's going to kick the bucket. The Yerusha goes memele. He doesn't give it over. What kind of a lashon hanchilo esbonav? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika learns from the lashon of pasuk. The Torah gives the father the right to divide the Yerusha however he wants. So let's say he has 10 sons, and some of them are already grown sons, and some of them are doing very well in business, and some of them are sitting and learning, they can use a little help, and some of them have bigger families than the others. So he doesn't want all the children to divide, each one should get 10% of the Yerusha. He wants the one who's learning should get more, and the one with a bigger family should get more, the one who's wealthy and has a smaller family should get less. So he can change all the proportions he wants. So that's he has the right to do that. The Gemara just has a suffix. Maybe that's only when he's a Shchid Meira. We have a din de Rabbanu, divrei Shchid Meira, kiksuvim v'chim misurim domi. That's only a din de Rabbanu, that's not a din de Torah. That's a din med rabbanon. Now shchid meira, the man is shchid meira does mean that he's a geyser. Shchid meira means he's a chayel mutal lemishkov. He has the flu, he has a cold, and he's laying in bed. So, so if he leaves a tzavor, he has this flu and he's laying in bed and says, in case I die, everybody laughs. Who says you're going to die? You're not holding by dying yet. He says, in case I die, I would like to give this as a gift to so-and-so, give this as a gift to so-and-so, I want to give $20,000 to this one, so on. So the din is that you don't need any kinyon in the Rabbanon made a takana because we're afraid that yichbar olav cholyo, that he may get so aggravated over the fact he just has a plain flu, but he may get so aggravated over the fact that that in case he dies, the money will not go to the person that he wants, so he may get sicker. His psychological attitude at the time that he's sick will determine whether he's going to get better or not. So he may get so aggravated that he'll remain sick. Thank you very much. So the din is if a Shechid Mira leaves instructions, if I die, you should give this to so-and-so, then he gets better. Then he lives on for another 80 years. So you don't say Divya Shechid Mira, only if he dies, Meis Mitoch Olyo. But if it gets better, so there's no more Divya Shechid Mira. So this din Divya Shechid Mira, the whole thing was an invention with the Rabbanon. The whole concept is purely with the Rabbanon. Usually you have a rule called the Tikkun Rabbanon came there right to Tikkun. Is it patterned after any din deraisa at all? So the Gemara has a suffix over here. This Mishnah of Rabbi Yechem Abroika is in Bava Basa of Kuf Lamed Amad Aleph. And the next daf on Kuf Lamed Aleph, and now the Gemara asks the question, Yom Hanchilu Az Banav. Sounds like it's a specific day. Maybe Rabbi Yechem Abroika is din, and we pass like Rabbi Yechem Abroika. Torah knows them shoes laf lahaz kol ha'chom ish yirtze. He can say the one who's learning Torah should get 20%. And the one is very wealthy, he should only get 5%. And the one with a larger family should get 20%. You can change the number, as long as it doesn't exceed 100%. Okay. Can't give more than he has. Okay. So the Gemara has a suffix. Does Rabbi Yechem break his din only apply when the man is a Shechid Meira? Or even if he's not a Shechid Meira? So the suffix, we paskin that it only applies when he's a Shechid Meira. If the man is not a Shechid Meira, it doesn't apply. Could be that that's with Mesupik, that's what the Yom Hanchilo Azbanav means on the day, at least he has to be sick. He's nowhere, he's not a ghost face. A ghost face is one who's in the process of dying. He doesn't have to be a ghost face, but he has to at least be a Shechid Meira. So that's Alfi Pashto, it's called the Tikkun Rabbanon, came the Raisa Tikkun, the Takkana the Rabbanon, of Divrei Shechid Meira, King Suvim Chin Simtam, that you give a special status to the Shechid Meira. That's a pattern after this din the Raisa, the Rabbi Yechem Abroika's din only applies by Shechid Meira. But then the Mishnah spells out that Rabbi Yechem Abroika's din only applies if it's a bein bein abonim. Means that the person is in line to get a Yerusha. Like I gave a mashal, I have 10 sons. If a person, I don't have 10 sons. If a person would have 10 sons, and each one would be in line to get, let's say, 10% of the Yerusha, because none of them is a bchor, and he starts juggling the figures. So instead of getting 10%, this son will get 15%, they'll only get 5%, another son will get 20%, one will get 1%, you've got to change all the percentages. So since each one is in line to get something, so you can give larger, smaller. What if he wants to give bas, b'mok, and banim? So then the Mishnah says, but the daughter's not aligned to get anything. Whenever there is a son, the daughter's not aligned. Or he wants to give to the next door neighbor. The next door neighbor is probably a 50th cousin. If you go back, everybody's related to everybody else. But he's not in line at all to get any Yerusha over here. So that's not covered with the din, the araisa, of Rabbi Yechem Abroika. It's very restricted. Rabbi Yechem Abroika's din that you can make a tzavor only applies when the man is a Shechid Meira, and it means that he dies right after. Like in the case of the Rabbanon, Divya Shechid Meira, Kiksuv, and Chisam. What do you mean? The guy has the flu at the age of 20, and he has Divya Shechid Meira, and then he lives another 100 years. So that's not divish. The din of the Rabbanon doesn't apply. The din deraisa doesn't apply of making a tzavor. So the din deraisa is very restricted. The din deraisa is very restricted. The din de Rabbanon is also restricted. Divish Shechid Meira King Simich and Simdam is only if he makes the tzavor while he's a Shechid Meira, and then he dies soon after. Usually people make a tzavor when they're healthy at a much younger date. They're not holding by anywhere near the end. Makes me talk all young, that he never really gets better from that sickness.
Even if it's a while, but
yeah. Let's say he has the flu, he's laying in bed, and then it takes a couple of months, and he dies. He never really got better. So that would be the din de Rabbanon. That would be the din de Raisa of Rabbi Yechem Abroika. He can juggle the amount, and that would be the din de Rabbanon. He can even give to the next neighbor also.
the Divrei Shemira only of Samar that we have written already previously?
Yeah. Because Divrei Shemira is a concern with Rabban that it may hasten his death. He'll be aggravated over the fact that the money is not going to the right person, so it may hasten his death. So they say that supersedes everything. Whatever he says when he says Shemira. But Lamaisa, people make a Tzavua much younger. If you look on page 5 in the Maamar Mekoymos, you should some know this sefer. There's a sefer called Mishmeres Sholem. Mishmeres Sholem is written around the year 1900 by one of the Gdolim in one of the Rabbanim in Europe. Mishmeres Sholem is a running commentary on the Prima Godim on Yeridaya. So in Europe, all the Rabbanim had to learn Yeridaya with the Prima Godim. And a lot of times you don't know what the Prima Godim is talking about. So it's very popular that sefer Mishmeres Sholem explains all the Prima Godim. In America, nobody learns the Prima Godim, so what do you need a super commentary on the Prima Godim for? Anyway, so the same author wrote a sefer, Chaim of Rochel and Mishmeres Sholem on Hilchas Avelus. He always used the euphemism, Chaim, because he's talking about death. And he has all of Hilchas Avelus alphabetically arranged, and you can find Meridik Aliklet, and you can find everything here. And he has such a sefer, Chaim of Rochel and Mishmeres Sholem on Hilchas Dalet Minim. Also, he writes that usually the Rabbanim are so busy learning Hilchas Rosh Hashanah, Hilchas Yom Kippur, so they don't have time, to go through the Hilchas Dalet Minim. So when Balabos comes with a Shaila, they can't find it in, you have to start mishing the pages, he says. That's what prompted him to write a whole Sefer, alphabetically arranged, and be able to find every Din 1, 2, 3. Taka Moiridika Sefer. Has every Rishon and every Akron and any Bekir. So here he writes on the Tzavoah, in Ois Tes, quotes from the Gdolim, that when a person reaches the age of 50, it's a good idea that he should make a Tzavua. Rabbi Gifter, when he reached the age of 50, made a Tzavua. So one of his daughters-in-law thought that he was so morbid. Well, he's making Tzavua at the age of 50, what's the matter? So for years, she went around with that attitude, there's something wrong with that man. Then I told her, it says in this form like that. Oh, she didn't know. He just followed what it said over here. And in his Tzavua he wrote, that any issue that comes up in Hilchas Avelus, he wants his children to follow the psak of the Chaim of Rochel, Mishmeres Sholem. He liked this sefer. He followed this also. Then he reached the age of 50. They made him a little birthday party, and he told him he made a tavor, the covered his 50th birthday party. Oh, that's the right thing to do. So the shaila is, how can this tavor be binding if he wants to give to strangers, or he wants to give to even to the daughters? It's even if he wants to give to the sons and change the percentages, he's not yet a Shchimira, so the Din Deraisa doesn't apply, the Din Derabbanan doesn't apply. So we have another Din Derabbanan, Mitzvah L'Kaim Divrei Ames. Mitzvah L'Kaim Divrei Ames, that if a person left instructions before he died, that after he dies, they should take the assets and give it to this place, that place, the other place, even though he's not a Shchimira at the time that he left the instructions, that's also a Din Derabbanan, Mitzvah L'Kaim Divrei Ames. The Pesukim say it doesn't apply in other areas outside of Mammon. Let's say he leaves instructions how they should continue running the yeshiva. What do you mean? They don't have to listen to him. If he leaves instructions what to do with his assets, okay. He's going to leave instructions, he wants the children, he never liked so-and-so, he never got along with them, so he wants the children to continue the family feud. So it says in Pesukim that there's no mitzvah the kind of Rameis over there. It only applies when it comes to Dini Mammon. So Tosfos in Gittin Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and then on the side of the Tosfos they give you all the cross references. There's a gigantic Tosfos in Bava Basra, much bigger than the little Tosfos in Gittin. Tosfos in Gittin is also not so small. So Tosfos has kashas all over the place. There are gemaras all over the place, but people are leaving instructions what to do with their assets after they die. And it says you don't have to honor it. If they didn't make kinyan, you don't have to honor it. What happened to the din mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames? So you see that it has to be very restricted. Mitzvah L'Kaim Divrei Ames has to be limited. So Tosfos suggests one suggestion, and that's the suggestion that's accepted in the Shulchan Aruch, that it only applies if Hushlash Metchila L'Kach, means I'm 50 years old, and I say, when I die, I want to give $20,000 to my next door neighbor, and I take the $20,000 now, not just I write it in my will, that doesn't help, I take the $20,000, and I give it to a lawyer, and I say, you put it in an escrow account, or I put it in a separate account. I put it in a separate bank account held on behalf of so-and-so, that when I die, that money should go to Pliny. if the money was hushlish min chilu lekach, that's when you apply the rule of mitzvah l'kaim d'rameis. No, most of the time, when people make a savor, people make a will at the age of 50, they don't put the money in a separate account. Sometimes they'll do, sometimes they will, but they'll link this up with their regular checking account. They put money, what do you call this, in the bank. You put in money held in trust, a trust account. A trust account in trust for my nephew. I have a nephew who has some kind of a learning disability, and I want, and he's going to need a lot of money to be educated. So I put $100,000 in a trust account, but I want to be able to use the money now. So it says this is in trust for that nephew. And then, since I'm the trustee or whatever, I have my name on it also, so I can make my checks out and put money in, take money out. But I'm going to see to it that at the time that I die, there'll be $100,000 in that account that'll be able to go to that. So that's not called hushlish min chilu lekach. I gave it over to the bank. Then I keep on using the money back and forth. So that's not hushlish. Hushlish min chilu means I left the money in that account and it's sitting there. Sure. I gave the money to the lawyer and I said, you put it in an escrow account. That's called hushlish min chilu lekach. But just because on paper you wrote down that this is held in trust for so and so, but you keep on using it yourself, the pashtus is that's not called hushlish min chilu lekach. Chaim Moshe has a tshuva in Achiezer, where he writes that if a person leaves a tavor where he wants to leave money to tzedakah, he says, after I die, he makes a list of 15 of his favorite tzedakahs, and he says he wants all these tzedakahs to get percentage-wise, this one should get 5%, 10%, 20%, right, of this of this money that he's going to leave over. So he has a chiddush that he thinks that legabi tzedakah, you don't require hushlish matchila lekach, and the din with the rabbanon of mitzvah lekam de rameis will set it in without hushlish. Why? Because we have a din legabi hegdish, amirosa la gavoya kim sirosa la hegedomi. When I say I want to give $100,000 to hegdish, so it's considered as if I already made a mesira, kim sirosa la hegedomi, as if I made a kinyan. And in choshe mishpot and in yeredeya, there's a machlekes. And we pass the halacha that amirosa lagva kim sirasa lehadidami even applies legabi tzedakah. Let's say a person pledges, happens all the time. The person only goes to shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. All year long he doesn't go to shul. He comes to shul on Yom Kippur and he pledges to give $25,000 until he's going to come next Rosh Hashanah. He's not going to be in the shul again. So what if he dies in the middle of the year? Once he dies, he can't do any mitzvah. So what are you going to take the $25,000 from his Yerusha, from the assets that he leaves over in order to pay his pledge? What do you mean? What does the Sechet Tishmar? What the mitzvah to fulfill your property? He's dead. He's not fulfilling any mitzvahs now. After he's dead, you can't fulfill any mitzvahs. So the Shaila is, forget about mitzvahs. Is there a shibud? Do you say amirosa la gavaya kim sirosa the hen yidami by tzedaka? Are you only mechuyev mitam shvua, mitam nidrei mitzvah, mitam shvua? Says it's only mitam neder shvua. Once you're dead, you can't be mekayim the neder shvua anyway. Meisim chabshim. Or do you say no? That not only are you mechuyev mitam neder shvua, it's a shibud. So that was a big machlekes. Rabbi Yosef Kara and the Ramo correspondent. Rabbi Yosef Kara lived in Eretz Yisrael, in Sfas, and the Ramo lived in Krakow, in Poland. But they had a machlokes about this. So the Ramah paskins in Choshe Mishpat, as well as in Yeredei Hilchus Tzedakah. We paskin that Amirosa LeGavoya carries over to Tzedakah. The original Amirosa LeGavoya is by Hegdush Gavoya, Mishnah in the first Perek in Kiddushin. And the Ramah paskins that it carries over to Tzedakah as well. So Rav Chaim Moshe writes in his Tshuva that since Amirosa LeGavoya kimisira lehed yadami by Tzedakah, so that's considered as if it would have been Hushlish Matchilo Lekach. Since if it would have been hushlish min chilu lekach, the din of mitzvah lekaim devar meis would set in. So here also it's considered hushlish min chilu lekach. Maybe one should say the following svara. Maybe one should say that if I make a secular will, and since everybody knows that the secular government will not play any games, they won't let anybody change mashahu from that secular will. Then maybe whenever a person makes a secular will, maybe that's the equivalent of hushlish min chilu lekach. Why does the mitzvah lekam divrei meis only apply? Tesis restricted it, they limited it. It only applies in the case of hushlish min chilu lekach. Why? I saw to it that it's going to be taken care of. Not that the money's in my bank account and I leave instructions after I die. I mamish gave the money over while I was alive, so it's more certain that it's going to be taken care of. So maybe if a person makes out a secular will, maybe one should argue the point and say, that's the equivalent of hushlish ben tchila lakach also. So that's what Rav Chaim Moshe has, not in the Tshuvas Achiezer. Rav Chaim Moshe during his lifetime printed 3 volumes of Achiezer. The 3rd volume was printed in the middle of the Second World War. And he writes in the Hakdamah, people may think that it's a little odd that they're killing Jews right and left, Hitler's killing people all over the place, and I'm putting out a sefer, Pilpulim, Ankotshim, and all kinds of things. Tshuvas Lalocha. He says that's what keeps Klal Yisrael alive. Learning of the Torah. He says, people are always killed in all the pogroms, and the only thing that preserves Klal Yisrael is learning. So he says he feels that it's important, even though he's spending money on publishing the sefer, this is necessary for the preservation of the Klal Yisrael. So the 3rd chelek of Achiezer was printed during his lifetime, but there were many more letters and tshuvas that he wrote that were not included in the 3 volumes of Achiezer. So after he died, years after he died, they published, now they keep on publishing more, they keep on finding more letters, so they published a collection of additional letters. And one of the later letters and the later collection, in the letter in Chela Gimel, he only thinks that Lidzdoke, you don't have to have Hushlish Mkhila Lakach, because Amirosa Lagavaya is the equivalent of Hushlish Mkhila Lakach. In this additional letter, he raises the possibility, says he's not sure, that maybe we should consider making out a secular will as a form of hushlish mentchila lakach, and therefore the din derabbanan should apply a mitzvah lakan derameh. But he says he's not so sure about that. Not so sure. So he says if someone will be muchzuk, if they'll go to the secular court, if it happens that they'll go, he doesn't know if they're allowed to go to secular court later on. Maybe it's not hushlish mentchila lakach. But in the event that they went to the secular court would certainly award the people the money that they're entitled to, according to the secular will. So he said, maybe once they're called muchzakan and they're ready, so maybe then it is as far as that it is valid. Maybe it is called hushmash t'chilu l'kach. Rav Moshe takes this svar and he goes further. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in the Igaris Moshe, which he didn't even consider that significant that he should have it published in a separate tshuva. Sometimes Moshe has a long tshuva, and then he tacks on the shoyel asked him 2 shaylos. So he has, instead of writing 2 separate tshuvas of 2 different numbers in the Igaris Moshe, so he has the last paragraph and the other tshuva talks about a totally different topic. So here, this is tacked on to another tshuva. This is in Chelek Evanez, it's not in Chelek Hoshimish, but where it belongs. Tacked on to the end of a different tshuva. It's mamish Achidish Niflo, should have been a separate tshuva. And nobody accepted it. Most of the poskim after Rav Moshe, the last years of Rav Moshe's life and after he passed away, most of the poskim didn't accept this thing that he tacked on the end of the tshuva. Moshe came up with the following. We have rayas from many different gemaras. But even though we have a klal in kinyonim, let's say I own this pair of glasses. I make a declaration. I hereby declare that the glasses belong to you. So the Rambam writes, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, and Hilchos Mechira, Ein HaMekech Nikne B'Dvarim. Just by talking, you can't accomplish that ownership should transfer to someone. I own the building across the street. So I say, the building across the street should now belong to you. So that doesn't work. You have to make kinyonim. If you just make declarations from today till tomorrow, that's the Rambam, Ein HaMekech Nikne B'Dvarim. That's the first line in the Rambam Hilchos Mechira. So the Rashash, Sham Choyres, points out that there are many Gemaras which indicate that there are Yotzim in Aklam. Whenever there's a Gemara has a cases, Ein Heinat Varm HaNikdim Bamira. There are cases that something is Nikdim Bamira. And the Rosh Hashanah has a whole series of Gemaras like that. The Chazanish in the Sefer HaChoshim Mishpat, before the whole Sefer begins, he has one long page. Chazanish always has 2 columns. So before the Sefer begins, he has long lines, no 2 columns. He quotes this from his father. His father was a Rav in Europe, Tamar Chochem. So his father had his Chiddush also. His father apparently didn't have a Vilna Shas that has the Rashash in the back. So he gives all the Marmakimus that the Rashash has there in Chorus. So Rav Moshe says the same. Okay. Moshe writes the same Chiddush in his Tshuva, in the Chelek Emenezer, that he tacked on the end of a different Tshuva. So he writes, if a person wants to transfer ownership of his assets to somebody else, and there's a very strong Gemiras Das, so then the halacha says he can transfer the ownership without any need for any ma'aseh kinyan. The halacha recognizes that such a strong Gemira's das accomplishes transference of ownership. So Moshe Feinstein writes the same svar that Rav Chaim Moser wrote in his later letter. Chaim Moser said that maybe since everybody knows that the secular government is so touchy about wills, that they will not honor anything other than the secular will that was recorded in the courts, whatever, by the lawyers, that maybe Rav Chaim Moser was prepared to say, maybe, he's not sure, maybe that's the equivalent of Hushlish Mentchila Lekach, even though it wasn't, because he shows that he's very serious about it. He knows the government is going to absolutely honor this will, so maybe that's the equivalent of Hushlish Mentchila. So he's not sure. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says further than that. He says, since everybody knows that the government will only honor what it said in the secular will, that's the equivalent of an absolute full Gemira's Das, and it accomplishes a kinyan, not only Hushlish Mentchila Lekach, it accomplishes a kinyan in HaTorah. Not that like Rav Chaim Moser that it makes Hushlish and it's mitzvah Lekach de Rameh. It accomplishes a kinyan in HaTorah because it's such a strong Gemira's Das. Then Rav Moshe has to touch up a little bit, but in the secular will it says, I hereby bequeath. Bequeath means I'm giving after I die. Calls man that I'm alive, I want to have the right to spend the money. After I die, give it over to the sun, the moon, and the stars. I'm giving it to everybody else. But ain't kinya lahamisa. So how can Rav Moshe, how can he say that since it's such a strong Gemira's Das, it can accomplish a kinyan without any ma'aseh kinyan? But this kinyan that he wants to make is I bequeath, is lahamisa. Ain't kinya lahamisa? It doesn't work. So Rav Moshe comes up with a chiddush al gabi chiddush. The first is a chiddush number one, then he has a chiddush nifla. He says, ein kinyan lahamisa means like this. I make a kinyan with you that the building, if it's true that the building belongs to me, it doesn't belong to me. So if I say the kinyan, the building across the street belongs to me, I give you ownership as of September 1st of the coming year. And then I drop dead before it comes September 1st. I die in August. So ein kinyan lahamisa. Because who did the building belong to after I died in August? It belonged to my Yarshim. So my Yarshim never made a kinyan with you. I made a kinyan with you, Eidon Amakta, Dov Sheinu Shaloi. If the kinyan is only going to take effect September 1st, by the time it comes September 1st, the building doesn't belong to me anymore. So that's why it's obvious, ain't kinyan lahamisa. But if I make a kinyan with you, that I have the following property, and Kozman that I'm alive and I'm able, kicking alive and kicking, and I'm able to retain ownership, I want it to belong to me. The minute that I can no longer retain ownership, the Hainu, when I die, I want it to belong to you, and there's no gap in between my ownership and your ownership. So Rav Moshe says there's no problem of kinyan lahamisa. That's a fantastic chiddush nifla. It's such a big chiddush that Dayan Grosnans used to be, Label Grosnans used to be a Dayan in London after the Second World War. He just died a few years ago. He learned Radin. He learned by Rav Oral Ber in Kamenetz. He learned in Radin by the Chafetz Chaim. He was very proud of the fact he was a Levi. Very proud of the fact that as a young teenager, the Chafetz Chaim always would have him wash his hands when it was time for duchen. So he has a whole tshuva where he rips this apart. He quotes Rav Moshe's tshuva. He says it's against an offer in Gemara. How can you say like that? And most of the poskim do not accept Rav Moshe's both chidushim. They say they're just not true. Rav Moshe himself didn't make any kinyon. He just made, I don't know what money, probably didn't have so many assets. He gave all his money away to Tzedakah. All those millions of dollars that he made on selling all those Igros Moshe, he gave it all away to Tzedakah. The government used to call him in more than once. They called him in for the IRS, called him in to explain. They didn't believe that he gave 75% of his income in for Tzedakah, whatever. So and he used to go to the IRS, he thought he remembered under the communists. They could kill you. So he'd go to the IRS, he would be so scared. He just showed him all the checks, right? There's nothing to be afraid of. So he didn't have so many assets, but he made a secular will. He followed what he wrote in his tshuva. He held that the secular will solves all problems. Rav Soloveitchik also made a secular will. He, because of Rabbi Kiveikin, he held that the kibbutz, he didn't think that his children would not honor his wishes. That's what everybody thinks, the children will honor their wishes. And after the person dies, if there's some significant amount of money involved, even though I'm getting $25 million anyway, but he's getting 25 and a half, so there's what to fight about. He's getting a penny more than me. So people pick big fights. So they both didn't make any kinyon. Rav Soloveitchik didn't make kinyon because of Rebbe Kiveger. And Rav Moshe didn't make because of his children, the Igros Moshe. So this is really the Rebbe Kiveger's kibbutz aviyim doesn't always work, lamaisa. And Ramosha's Chiddush, Zayin Grosnas, and many other Chachamim have written Shuvas, but they disagree with Ramosha's. Both Chiddushim. So that's why it's problematic. So what if a person wants to make a will, and he doesn't want to give away the money now, and he's not a Shchid Meira, he's 50 years old. Even if he happens to have the flu now, but he plans to get better before he dies. So how do you make a will? You can't wait till you're holding by the end to make a will. How do you know when you're going to be holding by the end? So how do you make a will that should be binding if we don't honor the secular will? So some Balabatim thought, Dina de Malchusa Dina solves the whole problem. So it's interesting, there is an interesting tshuva in the Maharit Sahalon. Maharit Sahalon was a Tzfardish Talmud Chacham who lived in Tzfas. He was a young man. He was much younger than the Beis Yosef. He was a young man. After Rabbi Yosef Kara passed away, after the Mechaber passed away, two of his sons were married. So one of the sons who was married died leaving no children, and the wife needed Ibum Machalitza. So the surviving brother, the other son of Rabbi Yosef Kara, wanted to do Ibum, even though he was already married. They don't follow the Chemda Rabbein Geshmi. Wanted to do Ibum. And the girl's father, the girl was Simcha Vital. It was Rab Chaim Vital's sister. Was married to Rabbi Yosef Kara's son. So her father told her, don't let him do Yibum, because he's not going to treat you nicely. He has already another wife. He's going to treat you like a second wife. He's not going to treat you with respect, like a real wife. So he said, insist that you want to have chalitza. So it was a stalemate. She insisted she wants chalitza, and he insisted he wants Yibum, so they didn't move. So they were standing around for a long time. So some rabbi in Tzfas told the girl, a whole chachma, that she should spit in front of the Yavam. And the Gemara has a din Yavam Shirokaka Tachlots. Once you do the Rikika is done at the end of the whole Chalitza. So the Gemara has a din with the Rabbanon that if you did the Rikika, so there's a Maristain, people will think that you probably finished the whole Chalitza process. Once you do Chalitza, you're not allowed to do Yibum. So they told her, do the Rikika, and once you do Rikika, he'll be forbidden, he'll be prohibited from performing the Chalitza, from performing Yibum. And then they're going to force him to do chalitza. If he's not allowed to do yibum, they're going to force him to do chalitza. So that's what happened. So the girl tiptoed into shul. That's what the rabbi told her. She went to the Beis HaKnes, Arizal, whatever, on a Monday or Thursday morning. And they're about to lengthy as a terrorist. Everyone walked in. I'm a shuginim. She walks into the shul. And she tiptoes over. She spits on the floor. She walks out. They thought that she lost her mind. And then afterwards, the rabbi said, aha, the one who gave her this advice. She didn't know what she was doing. Aha. The halacha says, Yivam Mashirach Katachlot, now we're going to force the Yavam that he has to do Chalitza. So it was a whole world war. They started arguing. So the one who wrote the best tshuva, he was only 17 years old at that time, Aritza Halon. So he wrote a knockout tshuva explaining why the rabbi was wrong. On 10 different accounts, the rabbi was wrong. And then he became a foursome from that tshuva. So he has in the collection of his tshuvas, he's sometimes known as Maharitatz, but there's a confusion. There was another Maharitatz, also a Sephardish Rav. There was a Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak, who was a rabbi around the same time in Constantinople. That's also Maharitatz. This is Maharit Tzahalon. So this is Rabbi Yontif Tzahalon, who became famous from his tshuva with the Chalitza story. So he writes in another tshuva that he was once sent on a to visit all of the villages where the Jews lived in Arab countries neighboring on Eretz Yisrael. They were all following Dina de Malchusa with respect to Yerusha. So he was sent by the Rabbanim in Tzfas to tell the Balabatim to convince them that this is Keneged Adin. That Dina de Malchusa only applies when at least, as in Shulchan Aruch, when at least one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. But if all the parties involved are Jewish, we don't apply Dina de Malchusa. So when it comes to Yerusha, the person that dies is Jewish, all the relatives, all the children are Jewish. Of course, the Din Lamachus Adina doesn't apply. Furthermore, Rambam has an interesting statement. He writes that that Yerusha, even though it's a matter of dollars and cents, it's an issue of money, the Pasuk says, V'hoises us lachem l'chukas mishpat. So the Pasuk calls it, even though it's mishpat, it's money, the Pasuk calls it chukah. So we have to treat it as if it were Issa v'Hetzer. The Rambam writes in Hilchus Nachlas that usually there's a difference between Masna Masha Kosa Batoira Bedovisha Bemaman that Tanoi Kayim, as opposed to Masna Masha Kosa Batoira Bedovisha Beisir that Tanoi Botol. So Yerusha should be considered Dovisha Bemaman. So we should have said Tanoi Kayim. So there's a Gemara in Yesh Nachlas that you don't say Tanoi Kayim. So the Rambam says why? So the Rambam writes a drasha that does not appear in the Gemara. So he says, well, the pasuk says, "Va'isazas lachem b'chukas mishpat." Even though it's mishpat, the Torah calls it chukah. Chukah means he treated like Yisra v'Heter. You don't treat it like mammon is to say mas mashakas b'tav davish b'mammon tonai kayim. He rather treated like Yisra v'Heter. So it's Yisra v'Heter for sure. Dina machus adina doesn't apply. But the government says that a couple does need a religious divorce. If a couple wants to get divorced, they go to court. And you get a secular divorce. So the Allah won't recognize a secular divorce. Dina Machus Adina only applies in Dina Mamanis. It doesn't apply in Yisra v'Heter. Rabbi Soloveitchik told the story that he was once traveling on a plane. He always used to commute back and forth from Boston to New York. He said on one occasion he saw a Reformed rabbi there sitting on the plane. So he was so incensed why the Reform they had just had in the newspapers. And it's all the time like that, that the Reform rabbis will remarry a woman even though she never got a get. Against Allah, it's like Sinof and Aseres Adibra. So he walked over to the rabbi on the plane and he started arguing with him. So he says that this Reformed rabbi said to him, "Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. We had a convention in 1936, whatever. We said at that time that there's no need for a religious get." So he said that he told this Reformed rabbi, "What do you mean a convention? You can make a convention against the Din HaTorah." So he says to him, "Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. You don't know the Talmudic dictum that Dina Malchus Adina. We follow the secular law of the land. The secular government says that the secular divorce is enough." So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, "Yes, then right away. So why do you perform marriages? Why don't you just let them go to a justice of the peace of Dina Malchus Adina?" So he said, "Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. We recite a bracha when a couple gets married. It's a mitzvah. In mitzvahs, you don't apply Dina Malchus Adina. But when you get divorced, there's no mitzvah. You don't say a bracha. So if there's not a mitzvah, you don't say a bracha. So you say din and machlus adin." So he said that the rabbi, there was a little truth to what he was saying. Din and machlus adin applies, doesn't apply in Yisra v'Heter. It's not that a mitzvah versus Yisra v'Heter. It's mammonis. Din and machlus adin only applies in the area of mammonis. Doesn't apply at all in the area of Yisra v'Heter. So that's what he writes to Maariv Sahalon. Right, he was sent as a shliach by the older rabbanim. He was a younger person at that time. He was sent as a shliach to visit all of the Jewish communities who lived in the Arab countries neighboring on Eretz Yisrael, that he should notify them that it's shaloi kedin what they're doing, that they're not making out the wills according to halacha, they're just following the secular law, that we don't apply dinim achus adin. So one reason is because whenever all the parties involved are Jewish, dinim achus adin doesn't apply. And another good reason is based on the Rambam, and there's such a tesis also on ksuvos like that, that Yerusha is considered Yisra v'Heter. It's not considered, even though it's only mammonis, the halacha considers it Yisra v'Heter. It's a problem where the Rambam got that drasha from. The Rambam quotes the din from the Gemara, the Masna Masha Kosa Batar B'Davish B'Mammon Tanoi Kayim, but not by Yerusha. That's what it says in the Gemara. But the Rambam has this drasha because it says chukas mishpat, even though it's mishpat money, but I treat it like chukah. The Gemara doesn't have that. So they pointed out recently that the mocker of the Rambam is in the Medrash HaGadol. There's a Medrash HaGadol on Chumash that has all kinds of drushes. So that's highly questionable. They think that the author of the Medrash HaGadol took things from the Rambam and he put it into the Medrash HaGadol. Came after the Rambam. It didn't precede the Rambam. So they're not exactly sure where the source of the Rambam is to this drusha. But that the Rambam is quoting some source that we treat Yerusha as if it were Yisra v'Heter. So Dina Machus Adina does not apply. It's interesting, the Rogatchover died in the late 1930s, so he has on page 17, people used to send him letters and learning, Shilas, everything, he used to write hundreds of letters every day. He said if he would have had to pay for the stamps, he would go broke. So he could only answer if you would send him a postcard. He used to always send him a Shilas or a Kasha on a postcard. It had double postcard years ago. You would rip it on the perforation, and then there's already prepaid postcard. The postage was already paid. So he always used to answer back everybody's cash. Usually the bachurim and the yeshivas would want to ask him a good start of cash. But they ask him shaylus also. So they keep on putting out collections of letters of the Rogatchover. So this was one of the earlier collections. So someone asked him, Does it make sense if they'll make a Jewish Medina? They were talking about the possibility of making a Medina in Eretz Yisrael. For years they were talking about it. They asked him, someone sent him a letter, also in the collection of letters. What does he say about the Sholosh Shavuos? The Sholosh Shavuos is about not establishing a Medina in Eretz Yisrael, anti-Zionism. So he didn't want to answer. So he wrote a whole shtickle Torah on the Sholosh Shavuos. It had nothing to do with what they... What does he say about the Aguda? He asked him, what does he say about the Aguda? He writes a whole shtickle Torah about Lulav Tzarech Eged. He knew what they went. He didn't want to take a stance. So here they asked him a Shaila. If we'll establish a Jewish Medina in Eretz Yisrael, but it's a problem to follow the Dine HaTorah. The Dine HaTorah, that the sons get the Yerush and the daughters get nothing. So they'll have a world war. So will it make sense to establish Dine de Malchus Adina, the Jewish government will make laws that the sons and the daughters yarshin equally. So would that be acceptable or not? So he's Eish Lehove against that. He says that that was the beginning of the early Christians. And they carried it over from the Tzedukim, from the earlier generations, and the early Christians picked up a lot of shtick from the Tzedukim, that the when it comes to Yerusha, that we're cheating the women, we have to give the women equal rights. Has a whole attack against that. He said, you can't, the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael can't pass such a law, that's like Christianity. That's an insult to the Jewish religion. But Lamaisa the Ramon, Chayshim Ishba, does write that there is a problem. That in the days of the Ramah, the problem was solved by giving the daughters a chatzi chelik, a half of a chelik. So let's say if I have I have six daughters and I have three sons, so you treat each son as if he's two children. I have nine children, so instead of dividing the Yerusha equally, so in the days of the Ramah they were divided. Each daughter would get one portion, six portions for the six daughters. And each son would get two portions. I divide it in 15 shears. So the sons get, I mean, a third of the sons get everything, the daughters get nothing. So the daughters felt awful about that. So they used to solve the problem, give the daughter a chelek chatzi zocher, like a half a son. So each son gets a double portion, and each daughter gets one portion. Today, it probably will not solve the problem. Sometimes people leave that, people sometimes learn it, Talmid HaChacham, they know it's something in the Shulchan Aruch, chelek chatzi zocher. So they, I know of one case, what was the story? If the man had one son, and I think four daughters. So I think he wrote in his tzavua that he wants the daughters, he wrote something as ridiculous, that the daughters should get half of what the son gets, they should divide among the four of them. So each one got mamish, a 16th or something. He forgot, he didn't know what it said. Chelek chatzi zocher. And he wrote it in the Hebrew. He wrote it in such a way that each one got peanuts. They never forgave their father because he cheated them. He didn't even give them what the Ramot says. So today, Mr. Dama, you have to give the daughters an equal share to the sons that they shouldn't feel upset. People are still very upset.
Where did Ramot get the idea to do this?
He quotes it from earlier generations.
It's not stealing from the sons.
Oh, so it is stealing from the sons. So you have to make it that it should be legally binding. So how can you make it legally binding? That's the shaila. Just going to make out a secular will. So most of the pasuk do not accept the Rav Moshe's psak. And just to follow Rabbi Kivega Kibbut Aviyein doesn't always work. They're not always so prepared to lose millions of dollars or thousands of dollars for the purpose of Kibbut Aviyein. They're not going to follow Kibbut Aviyein. And to say mitzvah the kind of Ramez, it wasn't the Hushlish Mekhila Lakach. And the Tzavua doesn't apply. The Tzavua doesn't apply. Wants to give to the daughter. So how can you arrange this? So the Ramot tells you should make a kinyan. So let's say the man, let's say I have nine children. So I have to guess how much money will I have at the time that I die? Zafim Vissim, when am I going to die? So they recommend you should write a tzavua at the age of 50. How do I know how long I'm going to live? So let's say at the time that I'm going to die, I guess I'm going to have $9 million. Let's say I teach in YU. I'm going to have $9 million. So I want each one of the daughters to get $1 million and each one of the sons to get $1 million. So that's a cinch. I make a kinyan. Each daughter gives me a handkerchief and I accept the handkerchief and I say, everybody obligate myself to give you $1 million. Right? Yeah, but then they can clean me out now. They'll take all the money now. So I don't want that. I don't want that they should take all the money now. So I say, I obligate myself to give $1 million after I die. So that's in Kinyan Lahamisa. So that doesn't help. So I say, I obligate myself now to give $1 million only collectible after I die. So that's also no good. It's also in Kinyan Lahamisa. So the Ramah says, you got to say it like this. I obligate myself. It doesn't make sense to make the Kinyan with the daughters. Better that the daughter should know. So you should make with a lawyer, okay, make with a rabbi, whatever. So the rabbi gives you a handkerchief, and I say by my accepting that, that there's a din of Zachni Adam Shlebefonov. Taisis in Kiddushin, Davchal Bavim Beis points out that really the Kala should give her handkerchief to the Chosin to be kind of the Sefis Ksuba in the Nedunya. The Ksuba itself is Takanas Chachamim, but the Sefis Ksuba is only if the Chosin agrees. So the Kala should really give her Suda. The Kala is in the other room, she's not there. So the rabbi, the Aiden, give the suitors representing the Kala, on behalf of the Kala, based on the principle of Zachni Adam Shlebefonov. So that's what we do all the time by the Kinyan. So let's say the religious lawyer that I'm working with, or the rabbi that I'm who's advising me, so the rabbi will give me a handkerchief as representing all of my six daughters, and I say, by my receiving this handkerchief from you, I hereby obligate myself to give each one of the daughters $1 million, okay, but I don't, if they'll find out, I don't want them to collect it now. So I say the obligation should be chal now. Most of the Rishonim are of the opinion that a kinyan chalipin doesn't work lach alamed. If you make a kinyan shtar lach alamed, and the fellow's still holding on to the shtar, when it comes yom lamed, then he's kind. If you make a kinyan moed, so the Gemara says, even though the money was spent, afel pishin esach la moed, there's no problem of kol sekinyon. But by kinyan chalipin, if you make a kinyan chalipin lach alamed, most of the Rishonim are of the opinion that it's no good. The Rambam stands alone. The Rambam holds Chalip and Lach Alam, it is good. Most of the Rishonim hold it's no good. So when you make a Kinyan Chalip, and you can't say, I'm making a Kinyan Chalip, and that should take effect when I reach the age of 100. That's, I may die before 100, it won't help. And it's Lach Alam, so Chalip is no good, Lach Alam. So you got to say, I make a Kinyan Chalip, and I obligate myself to give each one of the daughters $1 million, Mayachshav, right now. But then I don't want them to have the Zchus HaGvir Meyachshav. So I can't say, and the Zchus HaGvir should only take effect after I die. That's also Tegnish. It's also a violation of Ein Kinyan LaHamisa. So I have to say, that's how the Ramah says, I have to say, I want the Zchus HaGvir to take effect the day before I die. Shoachas Kodim Yisos. So you're never going to know when, so she'll never be able to collect it until after I die. You won't know in advance when it's going to be the day before he dies till after he dies. Then you look back in retrospect and you'll be able to determine where Meshach is going to be. So basically, that should really have been a problem of Ein Breira. Whenever you make a Kinyan, and you want the Kinyan to take effect in the future at some time, and you don't know when it's going to take effect. You'll only know later that it just took effect previously. A man gives a get to his wife. Let's say a couple is married and they have no children, and the wife is going to have to go through chalitza, and the brother-in-law is a meshugana. So the husband is afraid his wife is going to have to suffer with his brother, the meshugana brother. He gives his wife a get, but he needs his wife. He doesn't want to have an isa yichud. So he gives his wife a get. Harizi gitach lacha misa. A get lacha misa is no good. So he gives his wife a get. Harizi gitach shachas kaita misa. The get should take effect the minute before I die. So the Gemara says that's a machlekes hatanaim. If you hold breira, whether you hold yesh breira or ein breira, because at the time the get is taking effect, shachas kaita misasi, you don't know yet that it's taking effect. You'll know in another hour that this was shachas kaita misasi. The get will be chal. You will realize later on that the get was already chal. So that's a violation of ein breira. We pass an ein breira with respect to din of darais ein breira. So the Rama over here is writing something that's problematic. He doesn't explain it. He just makes a statement. You have to make the kinyan chalipin with your lawyer or with your rabbi that each one of the daughters, I think when I die I'm going to have $9 million. I want each one of the children to get an equal portion. If it'll be approximately equal, is also okay. And then I say the hischaivus of the $1 million should be chal taketh from yah. So the daughters are not getting mitam yerusha; they're collecting because I created the hischaivus. The hischaivus should be chal taketh from yah. Immediately with the kinyan chalipin, but the zchus higvia should only set in shachas kodim misasi. So why isn't that a problem of ein breira? So the Ramah does not explain. I assume that Ramah is probably relying on the Ran in the Dorim. There's a famous Ran, a lot of famous Rans in the Dorim. On the Dorim, there's only the Ran. There's no Rashi, no Tais, no Gemara. Just read the Ran. The Ran gives you everything. Of course, the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the Rashi, and the Tais, just read the Ran. You don't have to read anything else. The Ran is on the side of the page. So the Ran, in the beginning of Perek HaShutim, has a long essay on the topic of Breira. and he quotes all the different opinions, yes, no, maybe, yesh brera, ein brera, all the different shitas. And then part of his psak is that you only say ein brera on the ikir issue. But if it's just on a little detailed aspect of the kinyan, so on a detail we'll say yesh brera. So apparently that's what the Ramah is assuming here. He doesn't explain it. The Ramah apparently is assuming like that. That since the schusa gviya are only a detail aspect, it's a pretty crucial detail. When do they have the right to collect? But apparently the Ramah assumes that with respect to the zman of the schusa gviya, when do they have the right to collect the debt? So there we would pass in yesh brera. So he says the schusa gviya should only take effect. Shoachas kari misasi. So that doesn't bother me that that's in violation of brera. Yeah, this would be fine. So this is the solution. So this would be fine if the father knows how much money he's going to have at the time he's going to die. You know he's going to have $9 million. You know he has 9 children. So, and he has 3 sons and 6 daughters. So he's mischaiv himself with the Kenyan Suda. He makes a Kenyan Suda meyaksha. Shouldn't be able to empty him out. And he can always back out. Since the Schus HaGvir didn't set in yet, so it's Asi Dibah Mevatel Dibah. So in case he decides he's angry at one of the daughters, he doesn't want to give her anything, or he wants to change his mind, so he can always change his mind about everything because they don't yet have the Schus HaGvir. Whenever you make a Kenyan that wasn't fully Chal, so Asi Dibah Mevatel Dibah, so he can always back out. So this is fine if he knows he's going to have $9 million when he dies. He doesn't know when he's going to die, doesn't know how much money he's going to have. So how are you going to make such a will? So if you look on the last page, and these Marmakimus, I think this is the will that was drawn up by Rabbi Willig, if I'm not mistaken. What you can do is simply the following. The father makes that a secular will. So from the secular government, he's all covered. And he writes in the secular will. He wants all the children to get an equal share. Right? Fine. He shouldn't cheat the b'char. He should give the b'char the pishnaim. So that he has to, that Rabbi Yitzchak Ohana says he should calculate what the pishnaim is and put it into the secular will. There shouldn't be an issue about that. But then, because most of the poskim don't feel that the secular will is halachically recognized, that they're not so convinced that it's even hushel shmatchil lakach, that even with the rabbanon shouldn't even have the din of mitzvah lekayim de rames. So that's why he makes the following. So the father makes a kinyan with the rabbi, he makes a kinyan suda, and he says, he picks out any one daughter. And he says, I obligate myself to give my daughter $100 million in excess. He teaches him, why you? Not $100 million. Not yet. So he writes, I obligate myself to give my daughter $100 million unless all of the unless the sons agree to observe, to follow. He's twisting their arm to keep the kibbutz. So he says, I obligate myself to give one of the daughters who's astute in economics and in money. So he obligates himself to give that daughter $100 million and she's going to collect the whole Yerusha out of a chayv, unless the sons are prepared to follow my secular will. So he's twisting their arm to pressure them to follow the kibbutz, to follow the tzavur that he said. So that's lemaisa, what one should do. That's the way to do it. Several years ago, there was a wealthy balabas who passed away, and he left all kinds of tzedakas in his will. Of course, he left Wayu in his will. he left Lubavitch in his will. Lubavitch became friendly with him in his old age. So they made sure. Then he had the Jewish Theological Seminary in his will. So they called me up, and they asked me, when is the last time he attended my shiur? He used to give shiurim every week in Rabbi Lukstein Shul. And he was the sponsor of the shiurim he paid for. So they asked me, when was the last time? They wanted to know, was he in his right mind at the time that he put in the Jewish Theological Seminary? So I said, he only attended the first year, 10 years ago. He didn't attend it. I wouldn't know. But then they had people testify in court that it's clear the man was an Orthodox Jew. He would never give any money to the Jewish Theological Seminary if he would have realized that it's conservative. So the government did not honor that part of the will. And why you got the bigger chunk of the money. So that's why Dr. Lamb was very marketed. So the Balabas who testified in court that this man was an Orthodox Jew. Lubavitch, okay. Lubavitch will give him. Why you? He'll give it. He's not going to give to the theological seminary. So the man had no descendants, but he had nephews and nieces. So one of the nephews was so upset that he published a whole essay in one of the English Torah journals that this is not proper to write a will and to leave all the money to tzedakah and to cheat the relatives. He had relatives. He didn't have any descendants, but he had nephews and nieces. So the cousins, nephews, nieces. You have to figure out who's in line to get the Yerusha. So this relative published the whole essay. There's a din avuri achasanto. The Gemara says in Yesh Nachlan, you're not allowed to be maver nachla. It's an issa. You're not allowed to be maver nachla. You shouldn't be the sefer who writes such a will. You shouldn't be the edim. You shouldn't make the kinyan. You shouldn't have anything to do lo teib avuri achasanto. You shouldn't help the man out who wants to be maver nachla. The Gemara tells a story about one of the tanoim who lived in the days of the Bais Sheni. Yosef ben Yoezer was a tana. His son was not a tana. His son was a balabas, he was not a tana. But his son was a religious shomer shabbos, he was a religious balabas. He was so upset why his son was not a tana on his level, he donated all of his assets to the Beis HaMikdash. And the tanoim were upset with him. He said, you did shalai kedin, you're not allowed to be mama nachla from your son. Then the Gemara tells a story that the son was in business. His son was a religious shomer shabbos businessman. His son was in business. And then as he was dealing with Hegdash, the son donated to Hegdash more than his father ever gave all of his lifetime to Hegdash. With the whole Mavan Nachla. The son was a very nice son. So the Gemara says that that's not proper to be Mavan Nachla. Moshe Feinstein writes in his Shulchan Aruch, well, that the son is married to a non-Jewish woman. The son doesn't keep Shabbos Kasher, doesn't keep anything, doesn't give his children a Torah education. So then there's no Isra be Mavan Nachla. The Gemara says you're not permitted to be Mavan Nachla. Afilam ibro bisho, libro tava. Even from a bad son to a good son, he's a bad son. He's not so medactic in mitzvah. But not if he doesn't keep anything. Doesn't keep anything, then Rabbi Moshe writes. And the poskim assume before Rabbi Moshe. They all assume they don't think there's any issa. So this fellow published the whole essay that it's not right to take away all of the Yerusha from the Yorshim and to give it to tzedakah. People want to give tzedakah, they should give while they're alive. When you give after you're dead, it doesn't count. So he quoted a lot of the Maamar Mekaymus that appear in the Chaim Avrochel and the Mishmeres Sholem. If you look through the whole section on Savor, he quotes a lot of Achrayim. But they all say it is a proper thing. The Maskana that the nephew wrote is not correct. They all write that it is a proper thing to leave money in tzedakah. It makes more sense to give the tzedakah while you're alive. First of all, you get the mitzvah while you're alive. After you're dead, you don't get any mitzvahs. Mason Chash, but certainly you get a tax deduction. Especially give it before January 1st, you get a tax deduction. But still, he says the minik. He quotes Allah, minik always was, but people leave money to tzedakah in their wills. But on the other hand, there is a din of avuri achasanto. So the shaila is, how much money do you have to leave to the yorshim, to the relatives? You're allowed to give something to tzedakah. How much money do you have to leave to the yorshim that you shouldn't be in violation of avuri achasanto? So the Tzai Zachoshin quotes from the Taj Beit, it quotes the Chubas Agoinim based on a Mishnah in Ksubas, that if you leave 4 zuzin, that's enough, $5. So all the poskim disagree with that, even though the Goinim say like that. They say that's utterly ridiculous. How much do you have to leave? So the Rav Yechiel Nechu Tukachinsky, who wrote the 3 Svarim on Hilchas Avelis, what are they called? Geshu Achayim. So in his Sefer, he writes also about this. So he says he thinks you have to leave slightly more than 50% for the Yorshim. The Rov, Ruba Kukulam. So if you leave more than 50%. So in the Hakdama to the Sefer that was put out by his son, listen to Tikachinsky, was his son, I think. So he writes, his father did exactly all of his tzoket. The father had $25 that he made from selling the Geshur HaChaim, like Rav Moshe had $25, whatever. So $12.75. 51% he left for the Yorshim, and the 49% he gave to Tzokis. And he writes that his father, as he was dying, he gave the children instructions what they should do. They should light a candle, they should open the window, all the dinim and all the minhagim, the way he says in Shulchan Aruch, and he followed everything that he wrote in his own sefer, in the Geshur HaChaim. So Rav Moshe does not paskin like that. Chacham Sofer does not paskin like that. The Piskei Teshuvah and Chashim Mishpat quotes, most of the poskim say you don't have to leave 51%. You have to leave a davar hagun. So it all depends on which generation. Moshe is writing in his time. So he says if you leave $10,000 to each one of the Yorshim, that's good enough. I don't know today, maybe it depends how wealthy the man is. Maybe if the man is a multi-billionaire, he's going to leave $10,000 to each one of the children. Maybe that's peanuts. Maybe that doesn't count. But Moshe writes, you have to leave a schum hagun to each one of the children who's in line to get Yerusha, or each one of the cousins, or the distant nephews, whoever. It doesn't have to add up to more than 50%. And then he says the rest you can give to tzedakah. And then Rav Moshe has a discussion. How should you prioritize the tzedakahs? Should the tzedakahs be given to aniyim? Should the tzedakahs be given to institutions? Should it be given to relatives, poor relatives? So that's another cheshbon. He happens to put it over here, but it's really a separate tshuva about how does one, what are the kedimas in hilchas tzedakah? Good enough. Okay.
I'm going to go to the hospital.